My name is Rebaz. I work with the Indigenous People Solidarity Project, which is a small non-profit organization based in Winnipeg.
And my name is Shorosh Palani. I am also a member of the Kurdish community in Winnipeg. I work in youth mental health and addiction, and I have a master's in peace and conflict studies at the University of Manitoba.
This is more or less an act of retaliation and to some degree also an ethnical cleansing. And what led to this, or what made it possible for Turkey to be emboldened to attack the Kurdish towns in Syria, is the failure of the Iraqi Kurdistan region in being a strong ally to the Kurdish Syrian and being the voice and the platform to unify these democratic secular forces in the region. So the fallout of the referendum that failed and emboldened Turkey to go about do its business the way it wants, especially that there is no, the international coalition is not putting any high bars for Turkey to clear at this point.
When Erdogan lost the parliamentary majority because of the People's Democratic Party, HDP, they went after the Kurds because the ultra-right-wing nationalist Turks withdrew their support from the Islamist party of Erdogan. For that, to regain that those votes, they had to rile up this nationalist fervor by declaring unilateral war on the PKK so they can get those nationalist votes. This is how politics works in Turkey. And to prepare for the 2019 election, Turkey has to shed the bloods of the Kurds, of Alevis, of Zazas, and the people, the minorities, and the people in the region to get those votes. This is how politics works in the region, and that's painful to acknowledge.
I mean, I agree with Shorsh that a lot of this has to do with how Turkey carry on politics, but also is not just hard, cold math and just winning politics in the next round of election. It is what it is, that it lies in the fact that the Kurdish self-autonomous region in Syria is secular from core to core, because it follows the same basic principles of the Kurdish Labour Party in Turkey, while the current government of Turkey is Islamist and is based on the brotherhood principles that was established in Egypt. So it is also a factor of a holy war waged by a religious establishment against a non-religious people. It is true that they don't want the Kurds to have access to the Mediterranean through Afrin and Iskandaruna, but it's not just about the politics and controlling the areas. It is deeply rooted in the religious division. In one part, identifies as majority Muslim as Kurds, but also very secular and fighting ISIS the way they fought. And also you have the Turkish government, who is basically the biggest supporter of ISIS in the region, and a lot of ISIS fighters are actually coming from Turkey. This is an act of retaliation against people who stopped Erdogan's holy war, and his holy war's end game is to become the last sultan or the last caliphate. And this is what he's been highlighting in his latest speech. He said, people in the Middle East have been waiting for our return for over 100 years. And it is clear that what he's talking about. He's talking about the return of the Ottoman Empire.
This was released Thursday, February 1st from from Global Affairs Canada. The Honorable Chrystia Freeland, Minister of Foreign Affairs, issued the following statement on the security situation in Afrin, Syria. Quote, Canada is deeply concerned by the escalation of hostilities in northwest Syria and is closely monitoring the situation, including its impact on civilians. Canada recognizes Turkey's legitimate security concerns. However, we urge restraint and call for every possible effort to be made to protect civilians and fully respect international humanitarian law. Our focus must continue to be on defeating Daesh, or Islamic State. This requires a collective and concerned effort with all our friends and allies in the region, whose roles and sacrifices in attaining this common objective we recognize and value immensely.
That reminds me of the statements the United States government put out every once in a while when the Israeli army kills a number of civilians in Palestine and calls on both sides to self-restrain. You have people that are majority civilians being bombed, being airstrike, being attacked by a foreign government. Instead of asking the foreign government to stop its offensive, which I noticed that she refers to international humanitarian law, also international law asks government not to intervene and not to use force to enter other countries' territories and invade its people. There are other ways if you're concerned about border security, which is sort of also hypocritic if Turkey is now invoking this reason that I feel unsafe on my borders, especially that it hasn't been saying so for the past 3-4 years or 6 years of the Syrian revolution started, with a lot of people being able to go back and forth between the two countries without Turkey actually turning red on that issue. It is like Shores said, international politics does not recognize human for their worth. To international politics, it's just numbers and who is my ally right now. I'm gonna say one line that is every Kurd's know, and then I'll explain what it means. The motto that every Kurd say from a kid, from a 5-year-old kid to a 90-year-old old man, they would say, Kurds have no friends except for the mountains. There's a good reason for that. What is happening in Afrin is not new and is not the end of the line either. It is always has been like this. International actors coming in and saying, we are supporting you against these dictator governments. And when push comes to shove, they pull out, they leave the people burn. They did it when Saddam Hussein was on power. No, they even did it 100 years ago, like Erdogan said, when the European dismantled the Ottoman Empire, their main reason was, we're coming in to protect the minorities, ethnic and religious minorities. And that's why they promised the Kurds to have their own country. But after a while, they made another deal with the Turkish government. They left the Kurds to be divided and massacred by everyone. And after 100 years, they needed them again to fight ISIS. Now the fight is almost over. They don't need the Kurds again. The Kurdish fighters, every West World media have been hailing the female Kurdish fighter for being so fierce and so angelic in their stopping ISIS. Now they're suddenly not a part of the equation anymore. The Kurdish fighters know how to take care of themselves. They disappear into their mountains, like mm-hmm. I said. The civilians will be there to burn.
It does sound as if there's a history of Kurdish fighters essentially being thrown under the bus when mm-hmm. it doesn't serve those larger geopolitical forces, U.S., Russia, what have you. So that makes me wonder, to what extent does the Kurdish leadership itself bear some responsibility in, preventing these sorts of situations from happening, where they set themselves up for this betrayal, as it were?
So Kurdish disunity has had a significant impact on the unity of our movement and our people's resistance. The most significant of it being the conflict between the Talibanis and Barzanis in Bashur in Iraqi Kurdistan that claimed the lives of thousands of innocent people. But nonetheless, our hope, our biggest hope right now is in Bakur and Rojava, in Turkey and in Syria. The brilliant philosophical ideas of Kurdish women and Kurdish men that are fighting to end the patriarchal societies that colonial mentalities and religious extremism have created in Middle East. I want to tell the Canadian woman, the international woman, the international Me Too movement or No movement to rise up in all cities in the West, to rise up and defend their sisters in Rojava that are facing ISIS, that are facing extremist groups 15 meters away from each other, where one of the heroic female fighters was captured the other day by FSA, whose breasts were cut off and mutilated because she was fighting for a gender egalitarian society.
What should our listeners be doing to ameliorate the situation, to stop the killing, to improve the plight for all in the region?
If we care about the plight of refugees, if we care about peace in Middle East that has been the source of thousands and thousands and hundreds of thousands of people coming to the West, we must press our governments, to press the governments like Turkey and Iran to stop their atrocities against religious, sexual, ethnic minorities that are basically asking for their human basic needs, such as freedom, such as cultural, social, economic rights. I urge the Canadian government to intervene immediately to halt these atrocities in Afrin. And
there are practical ways for people to get involved. I mean,
such as
for example, we there was many rallies in the previous days in solidarity with Afrin. Unfortunately, very few non-Kurdish people came out to support, which a lot of it could be attributed to the cult, granted. But there are other ways. For example, put pressure on your MPs, local and federal. Call them, email them, send them a mail saying, I'm concerned. You're my representative. What are you saying? Expressing concern is not enough. I am concerned, but I also want some action. For example, as businesses to put some pressure on doing business with Turkey. That doesn't include the government necessarily doing something, but it requires
like a boycott, divestment type thing.
Boycott or basically move your. We know a lot of companies offshore and have a lot of bases in the Middle East, especially when it comes to online business. Move them around, shuffle them around. Boycott Turkish banks, for example. Not only the products. There are many ways for people to get creative and get on board. It also just need a conviction that the struggles that are going on in the world are not geographically, it is geographically separated, but what happens there, it affects you here. What happens here, it affects people 5,000 to 6,000 miles away. The important thing is to get the word out and have the, basically scratch the level of the political stalemate and go down deep down to our human values and say there are some people are being killed for no good reason. They are not fighters. Like you said, most of the people who are being killed, including those who are ill in the hospitals, are civilians. The majority are kids and elderly. They're not the fighters that you might say, oh, okay, they fight, they had it coming. It is deeply concerning when civilians are not moving to protect their fellow civilians. That is what is the, to me, it's very scary as where we go as a human race. Forget about the governments and the political agendas, but as civilians, when we do not move, when we see our brothers and sisters getting killed, that is very concerning and very startling, to be honest.
Well, Ribaz Shorsh, I want to thank you very much for coming.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you, Michael. Harbijit. Thank you.
Thank you.